It's time for episode 551 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes. Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast where every day is Earth Day, except for that time we recorded on Mars. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined across the internet by this week's special guest co-host, sitting in for Micah Sargent. It is the one and only Rosemary Orchard. How are you doing today, Rosemary?
I'm slightly confused. You appear to be cosplaying as Micah because in Zoom, you've got a picture of Micah. But other than that, I think we're all good. It's going to be a fun episode.
It's just because I'm the world's biggest Micah Sargent fan. This is, of course, the tech show where we talk about four topics with two fantastic guests. To my left this week, it is a senior reporter at Engadget. It's Carissa Bell. Welcome to the show, Carissa.
Hey, I'm excited to be here.
And to my left, we have the Slovenian tech podcaster, reporter, person extraordinaire, as he is apparently known, Anže Tomić.
Yes. The person part I like. Extraordinaire. I keep running away from that adjective, but you keep bringing it up. So I'll just take it this time because it's not Dan saying it. I like you, though. Dan's just Dan, you know. Hello, Dan, or Micah, or whoever.
It's fine. Everything's going fine. All right. Well, let me kick things off today with my topic. Meta has rolled out its new AI assistant in several places, including its smart glasses collaboration with Ray-Ban. I'm curious to know if you think, is this the second coming of Google Glass? Or does this time around it feel like this technology has a little more promise? Carissa, let's start with you.
Yeah, I love this question because I've actually spent quite a bit of time using these glasses. And as much as I have mixed feelings about, you know, having a Meta-powered wearable that you wear on your face, they're actually pretty good. And Meta AI still has some quirks. It doesn't get everything right, but it's actually pretty useful. You know, you can translate text and identify landmarks around you. Like, I think they'd actually be really useful for traveling.
For me, the integration with the AI everywhere is a little bit intriguing. Like, I don't actually know what the purpose of this is. If I'm having a WhatsApp conversation with one other singular person, why do I want or need an AI in that? That's not going to help. I could imagine maybe in a group chat or something, if, like, you know, it's like, hey, you seem to be trying to organize a time to meet. Here's a poll of the suggested time so far. That could be useful. But I need better examples to think that it's actually useful to put it everywhere rather than just a marketing tactic.
Yeah, the everywhere part kind of bothers me as well, because I'm getting like very much like Clippy vibes from Meta with this round of AI assistants everywhere, because I saw a bunch of screenshots and it was basically in every product they make almost. Like the glasses thing, it's always interesting to me because when something like the Meta glasses come out, it's like, yay, AR glasses, and you're going to see stuff and it's going to tell you stuff. But then in the background, it's still, you know, Facebook/Meta, who does not have, let's say, the greatest reputation as far as, you know, privacy stuff. And we saw the, you know, the court records from the Onavo trial, where they basically did a man in the middle attack with teenagers and stuff. And like, this is the company now that's supposedly at the forefront of, we're going to put glasses with cameras on your face and we're not going to in some weird way abuse that, basically. That's where my kind of most of my qualms come with the whole thing.
I don't know. I only tried Google Glass once way back when, and I haven't had a chance to try the Meta glasses. But I think there is a strong argument of having something lightweight that you are sort of using to interact with the world. Because, you know, it's not super onerous to pull out your phone or whatever. But I think there are times where it's less obtrusive to use something that might be on your face, which feels weird, right? To say the idea of something that's on your face all the time is less obtrusive. But like, I don't know, they as opposed to the Google Glass, you know, Meta doing a deal with Ray-Ban has made these things much subtler than they were in the days of Google Glass. And I think that is helpful in that regard, even as it raises concerns about privacy. So I think these will ultimately be more successful than Google Glass. They feel a little bit more approachable. They feel a little bit more useful to the general consumer public. And also, I think the other aspect of this that we don't want to underplay is, like, we are all used to having cameras literally everywhere now. I mean, everybody has cameras. Everybody has video recording in a way that is, it's much more omnipresent than it was when Google Glass first came out. So I think people have kind of become inured to that aspect of it. And though it may still have privacy concerns for sure, people aren't as immediately upset about it because everything is being recorded all the time, for better or for worse. But thank you all for your thoughts on that. Let us go to our second topic, which comes from Carissa.
Social media companies have been getting a lot of flack for their algorithms. People call them addictive, manipulative, things like that. And so this kind of gets at like the eternal debate. I'm wondering, are you team chronological feed or team algorithmic feed?
This is a really good question because I have had some genuinely amazing things suggested to me on social media that I, you know, might have otherwise missed if I was sticking with the purely people I follow in the order that they were posted feed, because I think part of the algorithmic feed is also, it's not purely just the timeline being shifted, it's also what else is being injected and how it's being injected to you. The algorithmic feed can produce some really great suggestions, which means that I don't want to give up on it entirely. I tend to prefer things like Mastodon and so on for keeping up with people I care about, and, you know, information from companies or apps or whatever it is that I actually want to know. And then things like Instagram don't even have an option, as far as I'm aware, to go away from the algorithmic feed. So on those, I'm stuck with that, but it seems pretty good. And I do frequently, however, go to certain people's pages to just check to see what they've posted most recently so that I'm not missing out on anything there.
Well, it kind of depends on the implementation, because I think they're not all created equal, because like the algorithms can be tweaked in a way where it can be very much useful. Like Rose said, like I've found stuff through the algorithmic timelines where, you know, I wouldn't have found otherwise, because it was just, you know, people who I don't follow or my follows don't follow. And I've found basically interesting stuff. We've also found all of the, you know, the people that are just trying to get attention and kind of game the system. And then that's a cat and mouse game between, you know, the company that makes the app and the people that use it. But yeah, I do find, but like every once in a while, I'll just stop using anything with an algorithmic thing and I'll just do Mastodon for a couple of days. And it is kind of nice. I don't know if we're like getting old because we were there when, you know, the whole Twitter thing got started, when it really was just a chronological timeline and we read everything. But like Mastodon, it's like very zen to me, basically, because of the chronological timeline. So I am team chronological timeline. But I do find the algorithmic stuff useful when they're done at least passingly okay.
Yeah, I think you're right, Andre. That's just we're getting old. I'm generally a reverse chronological person because I feel like I want to opt in, right? I want to follow the people that I'm following, and I'm here because I want to see what they're posting. I don't want to see all the other things that the service thinks that I want to see. And that's not to say that I haven't seen interesting things on the Instagram timeline or even on the Threads algorithmic timeline. But I get very frustrated, and I think fundamentally part of it for me is I don't want the infinite scroll. Like, that feels to me, it's like binge eating a bunch of junk food. It's like it's addictive, right? You keep going, but then at the end, I never feel good about myself after I've scrolled through an algorithmic timeline. And I look up, I'm like, oh my god, it's been 20 minutes, and all I've done is scroll through this Instagram timeline. So I find that a little more, I don't know, I just don't like it. It rubs me the wrong way. So I'd rather have an option. You know, I don't want to say that people shouldn't have an algorithmic timeline. I feel like if that's what you want, more power to you. But I would really like it if a lot of these services would stop hiding. And I will say to Rosemary's point, there is an Instagram chronological timeline on Instagram. It's just super hidden. And if you want to look for it, yeah, it's hard. And you have to load it every time, right? Like Threads, I think you have to remember to switch it over every time you open. It doesn't stick. And that's something else that annoys me. It's like, hey, if you want the algorithmic timeline as default, great, but also provide me an option for the reverse chronological timeline so I can choose rather than having you feed me whatever you think I want to see. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, and again, maybe this is a age difference or what have you, but I think I would at least love to have a chronological timeline always be an option. Carissa, why don't you wrap this up for us?
I mean, I think those are good points. For me, it depends on, you know, what's the app that you actually want to use it for, because you know, on Twitter, I definitely want all, you know, or a Twitter-like service, I want all chronological, you know, but on Instagram, TikTok, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I like the algorithm. I think it's, you know, it definitely can feel addictive and keep you there a little too long. But, you know, I think most of the time it is a better experience.
All right. That's two topics down, two topics left to go, which of course means it is halftime here at Clockwise. And this week's episode is brought to you by one of my favorite sponsors, Wild Grain. Wild Grain is the first ever bake from frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. As previous listeners of episodes where we've had Wild Grain as a sponsor know, I love bread. It's like my favorite thing in the entire world. So the idea that anybody would ship me a box full of bread that I can just eat at my discretion, I mean, it's perhaps even a little riskier than the algorithmic timeline because I will just keep eating bread forever. So Wild Grain was nice enough to send me a box with a handful of loaves of bread. Plus this time, yes, this time I got the croissants and the croissants are really good. I'm not going to lie. We threw them in the oven one morning and split them with the family. And it really brought back memories of childhood of like the occasional Sunday treat of having croissants with my family. So that was amazing. And all the bread is really good. And it's like fresh bread. I mean, you can't argue with fresh bread. It's the best experience of having like a fresh loaf of bread come from the oven. So I'm fully in the bag here. And now you can fully customize your Wild Grain box. So you can get any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries you like. If you want a box of all bread, all pasta, all pastries, you can have it. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/clockwise to start your subscription. You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your free first box when you go to wildgrain.com/clockwise. That's wildgrain.com/clockwise. Or you can use promo code clockwise at checkout. Our thanks to Wild Grain for the support of this show and Relay FM. Okay, halftime is over. Rosemary, what is your topic?
Well, my question is actually more of a sort of philosophical one, because I would like to know how you choose software tools to use. You know, maybe it's that you have both Pages and Microsoft Word and Google Docs available to you, and you have to pick one of those, or maybe it's that you are looking for a new tool. What sort of criteria do you have for finding something to use? Maybe you have a recent example that you can share, or if not, just look at two websites on your Mac and figure out which one that you prefer to access them with. Ajay?
Ha, you said look it up on your Mac, right? Yeah, because I recently, I'm gonna say switched to the Mac now. So I basically started almost from scratch. Like the stuff that kind of came over from Windows was like the Office suite and then the Google Docs, which I use more, to be honest, but we do get the whole Office package at work. But so I basically started new, and the way I kind of sort of picked was I asked around like Mac people, and I've just been listening, you know, to shows like Clockwise or, you know, ATP or whatever for such a long time. I kind of had like my eye on a bunch of apps that I wanted to try, and people just kept raving about, and like some of them like Transmit from Panic, and then anything from Rogue Amoeba, this is the audio stuff. You tend to, you know, the good stuff does tend to bubble up. I think the one wrinkle in all of it is the whole, you know, everything going subscription nowadays. And that kind of starts to factor in, because, you know, the first three subscriptions, you're like, fine, I'll just pay it. It's a good app. But the seventh subscription, you're like, how much am I paying for this stuff all in all? And I think that's kind of a big thing. I know there was this whole conversation now when, well, so the Canva bought the Affinity suite of apps, the company that makes the Affinity, and you could buy licenses for that. And we're like, everybody's just dreading everything going to a subscription now. So I think like the first thing is, will I have to pay it every month? How much do I actually need to use it? And then I'll go from there. But yeah. But yeah, the Mac stuff, like some of it is pretty great. Like when I first used Transmit, I was kind of mad. It took me till 2024 to use which is essentially like an FTP client. But yeah, it took me a long time to find like a really, really, really good one, and Transmit's that. Yeah.
It's weird. I have to think about this, because it's a thing that I kind of take for granted, I guess. I mean, I've been, you know, downloading software and apps and trying out different stuff for the better part of my life now, you know, 30 plus years probably. And Some of it is just word of mouth, right? I find the best stuff comes from word of mouth, is stuff that people mention to me, like, oh, have you tried this tool? These days, it's a little different because I think I mostly go in search of tools when I have a specific problem that needs to be fixed, or where I have a tool that feels like a shortcoming in some way, like, oh, man, you know, this is not bad, but it doesn't let me do X, this thing that I would really like to be able to do. And so in a lot of those cases, you know, I might go searching for something that fills that particular hole. Or I might ask around to friends or other people in, like, you know, member communities like Relay or Incomparable or what have you, and see, like, if anybody's got a good suggestion of an app that does X or Y. And a lot of times just research. I'm easily, like, you know, I'm always browsing the web. I'm always reading news stories. And, you know, I'll see people mention a new app or a new tool that does a specific thing. And I'll think, oh, I should give that a try. And you know, most times those don't stick, because I think, you know, I can look at a piece of a software or a tool and look at it and go, you know, that's really cool. And it solves this cool problem, but it's not a problem I have. So it's not something I'll end up using very much. That said, I'm totally guilty of downloading tons and tons of software that I use once and never use again. So, you know, this many years in, I think it's tough for something to disrupt my workflow because my workflows are pretty set. But I do love being able to come across a new tool, especially if somebody recommends something like, oh, this is really great and you have to check this out. But it's just kind of second nature to me as somebody who's been doing this long. Carissa, what about you?
So I think, kind of like you, you know, I have a higher appetite than most, I think, for downloading new apps and trying new services. I spent a long time reviewing apps. So, you know, I'm kind of one of those people that if I hear about something or I read about something that sounds cool, then I'll probably try it, like you. But kind of like you said, there's the problem that, you know, it's hard for things to stick. I've also been burned before, where you find some new little app or service that you really like and is really helpful, and then, you know, it's just one independent developer, then they shut it down after like a year because, you know, the business isn't sustainable anymore. Then you kind of lose everything that you had, you know, stored there. I've gotten burned that way a few times before. So I think for me, it's about finding something that, kind of like you said, actually solves a problem, saves me time. You know, these days I'm very locked into kind of the Google ecosystem. So if something I can sync with my Google account, I can use it on different devices. That's really important to me. It, you know, if I can start some notes on my laptop, pick them up on my phone, I love that. One recent example that I've gotten really hooked on is Notion. I love, you know, being able to use the Mac app. I can pick it up on my phone. I can keep track of notes. I think the formatting is really cool and interesting. And that actually has helped me a lot because it's notes, but it kind of can, you know, you can format things in such a way that I can't easily on other apps. And I find myself going back to it again and again. Whereas if it's just in the Notes app, in Google Docs, something like that, you know, I might jot something down and then, you know, not necessarily come back to it. So for me, it's about saving time and just kind of having that syncing aspect so I can actually use it wherever I'm at.
Fair enough. These are all excellent criteria. One of the things that I used to have as a pretty much hard requirement for any software tool that I was picking is that it had to have an offline mode, because I spent so much time traveling and on airplanes that if I didn't have it offline, I wasn't going to have it when I needed to work on it. Nowadays, my criteria tends to be slightly different. Is there automation support of some kind? Not necessarily for everything, but I wouldn't be my own stereotype if I didn't at least look to see if there was an automation possibility for a lot of these things. And, you know, I will often, you know, find myself looking at Keyboard Maestro and Shortcuts and AppleScript or something as a way to automate something and go, ooh, now which of these is the best one? And the answer is always going to be the one that I can do the thing fastest in, at least for now. And I can always come back and optimize it later if I really need to. But yeah, there's a lot of good ways of picking different apps and software and tools there. Thank you.
And for our last topic, comes from Anjay.
When I wrote it down, some stuff happened because I'm on a different sort of in different time. So I'm going to time zone. So I'm going to read a headline from a reporter named Carissa Bell. So Joe Biden signs the bill that could ban TikTok in the United States. So I don't want to get into the whole, you know, the Senate passed it, why it was passed and stuff. I am genuinely asking, like, how you see the whole sort of fight that's been going on between, you know, America and China and then Europe with its DMA, with, you know, just banning stuff, basically. like where you stand on that? Just one country basically banning apps from another country. Yeah.
Oh, good. A nice little light topic to wrap up the 30-minute show. Yeah. Let me get into this extremely nuanced issue in about a minute and a half. It is a tricky issue. I actually think this is there's a lot of gray area in this, and I know people come down on one side or the other, but I think there's a lot of nuance to it because, you know, we live in a global society, and especially via the internet, apps cross borders very easily, and they have benefits to that, right? There is the idea of you can have the internet is the entire world, right? You know, asterisk for places that don't allow for the free internet, obviously, but it has the potential to link people across continents and countries and all of this stuff, and that is great power. And obviously, once you get to that point of having something that powerful, you're going to have political entities that want to intervene in one way or another. I think there are, there are cases where countries are certainly within their rights, obviously, to try and ban certain apps or to ban business happening in certain ways. There are different approaches that one might take for that, but it's hard to necessarily look at one example of that. I'm thinking there was recently China also banned a couple of WhatsApp and some other messaging apps as well, right? And so, you know, you can make the argument that's extremely repressive government and they're doing this to block access for their citizens to things that might provide ways around extremely repressive rules. You look at the U.S. and the U.S. wants to ban TikTok or force ByteDance to divest it to an American company, which also feels at times a little distasteful. Like, I understand the rationale behind it, and I think that there are strong points about the national security risks and China's relationship with the companies under its purview that is not necessarily the same as in the U.S. or other countries around the world. But there is something still about it that feels kind of distasteful to it. Like, the idea that a government can just be like, no, you sell that app. That's an app that you developed inside your country and you operate it. But no, we want you to sell it to one of our companies. That feels super weird to me and protectionist. But I understand there are, again, a lot of nuance to this issue. So I don't necessarily feel like I have the right answer on this one way or another. But I think it's a thing that's going to become increasingly an issue as our world gets more tightly knit in this way. Carissa, what about you?
First of all, it's a really big deal to ban a service, especially, you know, one that's as widely used as TikTok or, you know, you mentioned WhatsApp in China. You know, if you have millions and millions of people using something, I think that's something that shouldn't be taken lightly, especially, you know, in a democratic society. There should be more transparency about why this is happening. If we really are thinking that, okay, if our representatives and are saying that TikTok or any app needs to be banned for, you know, a vital national security reason, then I think people using that should know the exact reasons why that's happening, not this sort of like hand waving China government, you know, stuff that we tend to hear. You know, we hear a lot of theoretical concerns when it comes to TikTok. I think that, you know, we should be able to see kind of if there is the intelligence community has specific know something that the rest of us don't know, then, you know, I think that should be part of the conversation. There are also other mechanisms most of the time, you know, that are short of an actual ban. You know, for example, there's we could pass stricter privacy laws. We could regulate social media companies more. I think that, you know, oftentimes there probably are a lot of other tools that are available to accomplish the same goal that aren't just, you know, banning the app and saying no one can use it.
Well, I would just like to say, hi, America. Welcome to the same experience the rest of the world's been having with Facebook, Twitter, etc. for the last however long these things have been in existence. We have not regulated this by saying, oh, no, you must sell this to a company based in Europe or wherever. No, we've added regulations onto things for privacy concerns and security concerns where they were needed. It is very weird to basically turn around to somebody and say, hey, I know you created this thing from scratch and it's really cool and all, and we like it so much that we're going to tell you have to sell it. to somebody who lives in our country, because this is where you end up with shell corporations and somebody just moving to another country purely because they were told to, and then they're, you know, not quite living inside of the citizenship rules and so on and so forth. There's all sorts of weirdness going on there, but it's a very weird approach that has been taken on this. You know, why sell it to something not Chinese, I guess? I haven't actually had a chance to read up on this, but it just seems so weird. You know, yes, data privacy is a concern. Yes, security is a concern. But, you know, most of the things that I've seen around this don't actually have anything concrete behind them. It's all shadows, mirrors, smoke. And yes, there's usually no smoke without a fire, but at the same time, this could all be an optical illusion. I'm not saying that TikTok has, you know, done nothing wrong when it comes to privacy and data security. I'm sure there are things that they could definitely improve. But it feels very weird to just be like, oh, it's America, not American, therefore it's bad. That seems strange to me. Andrzej?
Well, I'm just going to echo the first thing Rose said with the America welcome to this. Like, this dance is kind of weird. That's why I asked this question, because I knew there would be at least two Americans on this podcast. And it's kind of nice seeing it from the American point of view, where, you know, America starts to kind of take stock of, well, you know, it's not just our stuff out there in the world, because Europe's in this weird position because we don't have any of the, you know, tech giants, basically, to like China and America have. And we've been kind of trying to regulate that market with companies that just aren't in Europe, basically, aren't European. And now for the first time, like a major, major sort of app or tech company is not American and kind of has some influence in America. And it's kind of weird to see the approach America kind of takes with all of this stuff. You know, even the difference between the way Europe has gone about regulating, let's say, Apple, and then in America, it's basically just a lawsuit with a law from the previous century, basically. So that's why I asked, because I want to, I don't know, how does it feel, Americans? That's what I'll end on, basically.
All right. That is four topics down. We have just enough time for a bonus topic. Really quick, I want to remind you, though, if you would like to pick up any Clockwise merch, you can go to clockwise.social. We've got hats. We've got shirts. We've got now a tote bag. Oh, everything you could possibly want with a Clockwise logo on it. All right, bonus topic time. Very quickly, I want to know, what is your favorite animal that you have seen in real life? Carissa?
So I love this question. It was actually a recent experience I had. One of my good friends, his cat had kittens, and I had the opportunity to go over there just hours after they were born and hold these, you know, hours old baby kittens. And, you know, right now that's definitely my favorite animal experience.
That is pretty great. I personally team red panda. They are cute. They are kind of like cats. You know, some people say that foxes are cats running on dog hardware. You know, they're red pandas are kind of like cats running on miniature bear hardware. They waddle. Their back legs are longer than their front, which causes them to waddle. They've got really cute tails, which they use as pillows. And they also happen to be the Firefox logo. So, you know, so many good things, but they're just very clumsy. So if you see one at the zoo, it will probably fall out of the tree if you wait for long enough.
Penguins. I've seen penguins in a zoo, which kind of, I don't know. I have, like, every time I go to the zoo, I have a bigger problem with the zoo concept in general. But if zoos didn't exist, I would not have seen a penguin in real life. And they're kind of awesome. So penguins.
That's a good answer. I'm going to say we're traveling and we're down in Washington, D.C., which has the National Zoo, and we saw a really great cheetah. In fact, a couple of cheetahs. I love cheetos. I'm big on big cats in general, but the cheetahs, I don't know, I always liked them since I was a kid. I was going to say, Rosemary, my second favorite are red pandas, but literally I've been to the zoo maybe four or five times, and they have red pandas. I have never seen one. They're never
How
out.
How can you not see a red panda? They're bright red.
They're inside or hiding or something. Or maybe they just don't like me. Or maybe there aren't any red pandas. And it's all a conspiracy. Hey, if you'd like to get ad-free episodes with an extra overtime topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. Just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up for just $7 per month or $70 a year, and you'll help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we discuss our holodeck dreams. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. All that remains is for us to thank our fantastic guest this week. Carissa Bell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad I got to do it.
And Ajay, thank you so much for coming on the show again. And it was lovely to be back. I think you were on the very first episode of Clockwise that I was ever on. So it's lovely to be back on with you.
Same, Rosemary, same. It was a pleasure talking to you and Micah/Dan.
And we will be back next week. But until then, we remind everyone listening out there, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.